Hello and welcome to JudgeCast. This is episode 316. I'm your host, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and I am here with my two co-hosts, Charles Federer.
I'm actually The Rock, please.
Okay. And Marco Sanchez.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yes. Thank you for joining us this evening, afternoon, morning, drive to work. Okay. All right. This time, I don't know, I just said 316, and my brain immediately went either Bible reference or wrestling reference. Let's go wrestling.
Yeah, because wrestling covers both.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you all for joining us this evening, afternoon, morning, drive to work. Today, we are going to be discussing the Hunter Burton Memorial Open. It was a tournament that I went to this past weekend. It is a Dallas-adjacent event that serves as a vehicle to raise awareness for suicide prevention. So that's going to be a topic that we discuss a little bit in this episode. So, you know, just be aware that that may come up. But it has just celebrated its 10th year.
That's amazing.
It's really impressive.
And while I went to the event, this was my first year, and I'm not necessarily qualified to talk about what all it is, what all it means, how long it's been around in more detail than just saying it's been around for 10 years. And to that end, we have on two very special guests, both the tournament organizer, Joe Klopchik, and the head judge for 9 of the last 10 years, a one and only Mr. David Hibbs.
The Undertaker.
We weren't
sticking with the wrestling.
No, we can go with it, Taker.
Oh, okay.
So, Joe?
I would probably be like a super heavyweight. I know nothing of wrestling.
we can do, sure. How about Macho Man Randy Savage?
Sure. Yeah. Macho Man Randy Savage.
There we go.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So thank you both for joining us. This event, I had a blast working it and wanted to have you both on to talk about what this event is, what it means, and just give some background on it because it is a pretty stellar achievement. So could y'all tell us a little, well, first tell us a little bit about yourselves, and then we're going to talk about the Open itself.
Yeah, so I'll go first, being probably the older of the judge. My name is David Hibbs, as indicated. I've been a longtime judge, more than 25 years, a dozen of those as level 3 under now 3 different systems. And I've been, as indicated earlier, the head judge of the event, Hunter Burton Memorial Open, for 9 of the 10 years. One of those years just being because, you know, I had, as always happens, sometimes things didn't line up. The event got rescheduled to a different weekend and then rescheduled again. And I was actually able to be there that weekend. You know, we already had different head judge lined up. So it's been a really exciting and special part of the history for me.
And I'm Joe Klopchik. You may remember me from such JudgeCast episodes as 3 or 4 ago, where we talked about one of the things that I do, which is Judge Foundry, but we won't talk about that a lot today. I have done an order of magnitude fewer head judge iterations of the Hunter Burton Memorial Open than David Hibbs, as I was the head judge the year that he did not head judge. I've been judging for 10 years and to kind of mirror what David said, like, this has been a really important thing for me. And I grew up in the judge program with David as a mentor of mine. And now I'm like the TO of this thing that is an important thing for Texas. And, he's been like my head judge every year. And, you know, it's just a great thing. And I appreciate it a lot.
Awesome. Awesome. One other thing I want to stress. So, Hibbs, you said that you have been a judge for 25 years.
That's correct. Actually, probably a little bit more than that, because it was like 1998 sometime. I don't know. My actual certification date was lost in a database update on the old Judge Center when everybody's certification date was set to like 1/1/2000. Somebody didn't have their SQL set correctly and updated everybody and was lost for posterity, but Yeah, so, sometime in there.
That blasted yeah. Y2K bug.
That is kind of amazing, because when we think about, like, the old judges in the program, we don't think of the 90s. Like, you know, that's too far back. Wow. It just boggles the mind. But yes, David is when we need information about how things were back in the old days, like pre-combustion engine era. We go back and talk to old man Hibbs.
Yeah, we recorded an episode way back in history of Judge Cast on that topic. We don't need to recap it all right now, but go back in the show history, find one with judging Hibstery, I believe was the title, and you can go listen to that some other time.
All right. I was hoping for All About Procedural Errors, but I'll deal with it.
failure to agree on reality was always my favorite.
So this particular event, can you tell us the Hunter Burton Memorial Open, what is it? What is its inspiration? How did it come about?
So I'm going to let Joe first talk about who Hunter Burton was, and then we can talk about, and then I'll join in when we talk about how we all got started.
Yeah. So Hunter was a larger-than-life personality in the Texas Magic scene. One could argue he was, like, the greatest Magic player to ever come out of Texas, or would have been if he was still around. He top-aided Pro Tour Austin 2009. He was a mainstay at our PTQs and was just a guy that was cool to hang out with. He would go out for drinks after events and just, like, loved living life big. And he was a big part of the community. When you, like, this isn't just a guy. This is a guy that, for everybody that was part of the Grindr scene in 2010, 2011, 2012, he was their friend that they went and golfed with or magicked with or did one of these things. And sadly, in 2013, I was sitting at a local game store in the Grapevine area, which is just a 20-minute drive away from where the tournament is, and my good judge friend Ben Kwasnichka walked in the door and looked to Aaron Giddings, one of the other organizers, and me, and let us know that Hunter had taken his own life. And, like, that was just, it was unbelievable. Like, you can only imagine that moment. And from there, the story that Aaron will always tell is within a week, me and Aaron and Ian Joshua and Donna and Jeff Sandy all met and had barbecue at a Hard Eight that was 10 minutes away from the store. And we're like, okay, how are we going to make this happen? We have to have a tournament to remember Hunter. And what does that look like? And that's where everything really started. I don't know if you want to continue from there, David, but yeah, that's the inspiration.
I mean, that's a pretty good coverage. I figured I'd let you go first because you lived closer to him and we get to know him, got to know him, you know, more personally. I always got to know him as one of the players in my events. There's one event that's an old school PTQ that he came to of mine that was right after he had made that top eight. Obviously at the time if you hit that level, you hit the top eight, you were invited to the next event. So that also meant that you were not allowed to play in the PTQ and play spoilers. And, you know, he showed up and I had to go tell him he couldn't play that day because, you know, congratulations, but you can't play. And then, yeah, that's cool. So, you know, like I say, I got to know him as from the judge to player perspective. And I knew him as a member of the Guild Mages, which the Guild Mages were a big part of my Magic life from when I moved to Texas, because I got to know Jeff Sandy and Rob Lawing and the other Guild Mages at the events when I was mainly just a player at those events.
Yeah, to expand on the Guild Mages a little bit, because Hunter was a big part of them. Like, Jeff Sandy started this Magic team in the 90s called the Texas Guild Mages, and they played in PTQs from the 90s through 2000s through, you know, 2010, 2011, all the way up to 2018. And these were, in the 2000s, these were the guys who were always the end boss of the PTQs. And they brought, when Hunter was a teen, they brought him under their wing, and he was the guy that got brought up, and then he ended up doing that with Ian, and like that was their community. When I joined, like when I started playing Magic, these were, you know, the cool guys that won all the PTQs that everybody wanted to hang out with. So it was, you know, they were a big deal.
Right. You know, I always dreamed that one day I would be able to join the Guild Mages, but I wasn't close enough to Dallas for that to happen. Being in Houston at the time, it was quite a slog to get back and forth. And those were the days, like I say, the early days of Guild Mages before Joe and before Hunter had joined. But I got to know Jeff Zandi really well through that time.
So how did I think we've kind of spoiled it a little bit, but the Hunter Burton Memorial Open is dedicated towards supporting a cause, right? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Right. So the cause, as mentioned, Hunter took his own life. So the goal is to bring awareness to suicide prevention and what happened, you know, how it affects everybody around it, and to mental health as a greater area of contact, and want to make sure that everybody's aware that there are resources to help. If you are in, you know, those moments of crisis and just really struggling, this past year, all of our material has the big 988 number on everything. So if you're struggling, if you're out there listening and you're struggling and you just need to talk to somebody, by all means, you know, just grab your phone and hit that number 988 for some assistance. And that's really what the goal is, right? The goal of this tournament, unlike a lot of events, is not to make money. It's about bringing a community together and about, like I said, bringing awareness to this cause and trying to make sure that nobody else has to go through that moment where, as Joe described, of having somebody come in and tell him that one of his friends was gone.
And one thing that I want to stress is, from listening to Joe talk about it, you know, Hunter was a successful person in terms of Magic. He very clearly had a lot of friends and was loved. And, you know, depression and suicidal thoughts are things that can affect anyone, even if someone seems otherwise normal and happy or possibly successful. You might not necessarily be privy to, you know, what's going on in their head when they are not around you. So,
You never know the struggles. You never know the struggles that another person is going through. You might think you have the worst story in the room and just not have a clue. And one of the things I always loved about Jeff Zandi was he had this knack for knowing when somebody needed assistance or a mentor or a helping hand or just somebody to be there with them. So it's not surprising that Jeff built a community and around him, and then particularly a community around him that was willing to, as quickly as Joe indicated, within the first couple of weeks after the tragic loss, to come together and try to figure out how to make this happen.
Yeah. So we're talking a bit about, like what the cause here is. I think we're going to talk a bit about what this tournament looks like and why it's so great. But I wanted to mention that, like, one of our goals is to have a place that people can go to look forward to, because a lot of us struggle. And I've had hundreds of people tell me over the last 10 years that they've been to a couple Hunter Burtons and this tournament existing is the reason why they're still here. And it's not because of the resources, it's because they look forward to going to it every year because it's so special. And we want to create that place where people can have that experience and go, I want to be part of this community. Magic is important, or all of our other games are important enough to me. That's the thing that keeps me going. And that sense of community is really, like, it exists. Every local game store has a little bit of that, but not a lot of them focus on that as the most important thing. And that's our focus, is like, that is actually the most important thing at the end of the day. And we can make money and you can sell cards and all that, but it's really about seeing all your friends another time. I see people that I haven't seen since last year, every year, and they're all just really happy to see me and that this thing still happens. And that's like a central core thing for me for this tournament, is seeing all those faces again and bringing new people in and giving people a reason to be around for another year.
Right. And I've had similar experiences, and also had players come and say, you know, this is the only event that I play in all year. And I come to this event for these same reasons, that it's a community. It's always a different atmosphere. And I think that we work really hard to try to cultivate that. I know that I have always emphasized that in discussions with judges and staff, and then even talking with people not at the event, talking about that's the kind of environment that we want to foster.
A lot of charity tournaments happen over the years, and they just kind of come and go. But this is going on 10 years, and that's really incredible. Like, how did that happen, especially when you consider things like the pandemic and just, you know, so many things changing in Magic over the years? What do you think has made this such a long-lasting tournament?
I'll let David answer first. I think there's one reason that I have more than anything else.
I would give initial credit to Jeff Zandi, because he had a dream of this.
You don't have to go any further
than
that. I just want to be clear. My answer is Jeff Zandi's existence made this thing happen for 5 years. And that, like, we can expand on that, but to be clear, that was my answer too.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, the first couple of years of any of these events are clearly the hardest. As you said, right, they seem to falter after 1 to 2 years. If you make it past those first couple of years, I think then you started to gather some recognition, right? But really, as I say, Jeff Zandi had a dream from the very beginning of this being a large Star City-sized event, or if you remember the old Channel Fireball-sized events, something that was 2 days, huge prize pool, because that was something that Hunter loved, was that kind of competition, 2 day event, huge watches, huge tournaments, huge payouts, no splitting. Those were some of the mantras, you know, for Hunter.
Yeah, I agree with the tournament we built, and I agree that Zandi is what put us there. Like, Zandi was the tournament organizer for 6.5-7 years. And we get to have more sad news. Jeff Zandi passed 4.5 years ago, and now we have a memorial tournament for him. But he's an inspiration to me and to Aaron, and I'm sure to David and everybody else involved. And, like, I can't possibly stop doing this. This is, like, a huge part of my year every year. And it would, like, be devastating to me to even consider stop doing this, because it just has to happen. I've had conversations with people involved and said, like, look, if this isn't sustainable anymore because we don't think we can get enough people in the room, I will personally just rent a ballroom and run the Hunter Burton Memorial Open with 100 players, because, and just one tournament. That's all we need, because it just has to happen. And there's many people that believe that this thing just has to happen every year.
So to give people or listeners an idea of Jeff Zandi, I don't believe I met the man in person. However, in the last year of Exemplar, for several years, we would pick a judge and get a token made, and all the Exemplar nominations would be printed on the token. That particular one of the last Exemplar waves that existed was when Jeff passed, and there was a suggestion about making him, or choosing him as the person that would be the face of the wave, like the token stuff, and just the outpour of support. Wizards, even generally, we paid the artist, the Exemplar program, we had the artist and commissioned the artist. But in this particular case, Wizards ponied up for a much larger art piece than normal to go on the cards. And there was a huge amount of support. David wrote a beautiful article on what Jeff Zandi meant to him. He really seemed like a larger than life figure in the Dallas area.
And he was, he was a writer too. So he had written and published on multiple different websites. So there were people not just in Texas who knew him. I mean, he'd played Pro Tour also. So there were people both locally, at all levels that knew him, really. Locally, nationwide, even worldwide, knew who Jeff was. And I'm sure a lot of them still do. And you couldn't have met Jeff Zandi without coming away carrying something from that experience. I always say he had a heart the size of Texas, because I think he really did. We had that experience, and I had the privilege of being on the Exemplar team with Brian through that. And it wasn't just because of the timing. The Exemplar recognition that was written for him was perfect and classic Jeff Zandi. And it was just, it had every single bullet point that we looked for when we were looking for a nomination to highlight that in any given wave. So we were already kind of looking that direction, I think. And then obviously it became kind of like, well, is there even another option on this? Yeah. So it was a real privilege to me to be able to write that introduction and reveal for the piece of art, and to write the artist prompt. If you're familiar with how the art director works for Magic the Gathering, of writing a little prompt for the artist on what should be in the art. So I also got to write that prompt for our artist for that piece of art, for the tokens, and for it ended up being used for playmats and for promotional items for the open event as well.
Okay. And so there is currently a memorial event for Jeff Zandi at the Hunter Burton?
That's correct. Jeff Zandi loved to play with different, unusual Magic formats. He bracketed, some of the old Pro Tour decks. He loved inventing sealed formats. So we've been running, in his memory, a Chaos Sealed event. We always try to get old sets, valuable sets, to make it exciting and worthwhile to anybody who wanted to play in it, and just to make that the kind of event that Jeff would truly love to have his name on and to play in. We've been talking about some other options too, because even Jeff would get tired of just doing Chaos Sealed, I think. So if we can come up with some other crazy format, we might consider that in the future, I think.
If I could convince people to play Full Set Singleton, the format he invented and played against himself hundreds of games, and I, like, perhaps me and three other people ever played a game of this format and only against him, then we would run that. But I don't know that I could explain to people how that even works. It's a format where you get a deck that is one card from a set, one of every card from a set, and an appropriate number of basic lands, and that's your deck.
Wow.
And that's just the first thing that comes up the top of my mind. The man had so many things that he invented that he just always wanted to be trying something new.
So I don't know who came up with the idea, but I know that Brian David Marshall, BDM, is a big fan of the sealed box commander format, where you get a box of product, and it can be anything that's standard legal or whatever the confines are, and you build a commander set out of it. That seems to be also in keeping with a little bit of what you're talking about. Maybe that's something for a future year.
Yep. Always trying to find new things. I'll think about it.
And so that's one of the other two memorial events, one for Jeff Zandi. There's also one for Ian Joshua, who you already mentioned once or twice beforehand, but can you tell us a little bit about Ian and what inspired that event, and just about Ian in general?
So I'll read you what we have on our website, because I think it kind of says everything about this. Ian Joshua was Hunter's best friend. He wrote an article on our website, we can link it in the show notes, about his relationship with Hunter 7 years ago, and their friendship and their struggles and the back and forth. Ian passed 5 years ago now, and it was incredibly difficult for our community, and we made an event that we were confident that he and Hunter would think was the best event. Their closest friends would want to play in this, and you're right. It was a huge success, and it sold out, and we did it again this year. And that event is a $250 entry sealed tournament. And it's an RCQ, and one person, the person who wins that tournament, wins almost as much prizes as the person who wins the main event. And that's what they would have wanted to do. They're like, $250 deal. We want to play for all the money.
Wow.
Yeah, I got to play with, you know, I not being as close to the Guild Mages as Joe, I didn't get to know Ian as well, but I definitely got to meet and play with him at events. And again, have him in my events as judge. And I actually, you know, I like I said in my speech at the beginning of this year's event, I'm a spike at heart. I started as a judge because I thought it would give me a competitive advantage. So this is an event that I have so far always let the other judges run and played in because it's my kind of event too. So it's I didn't do as well last year because my pool was garbage, but this year my pool was pretty good and it was a great time. I mean, I still had a great time even so. You know, that's why it's there, right? Because you play it and sometimes you got to run good, as Hunter liked to say.
It's on the trophy. So a little bit more backstory on Ian, because I think I should do him some due diligence here. Ian was Hunter's best friend, as I said, but when I said that, like, the Guild Mages kind of took Hunter under their wing and brought him up, Hunter took Ian under his wing and brought him up. So he was a few years younger than Hunter, and they were just two dudes who ran around and did crazy stuff all the time. And but Ian was dedicated to his studies and his craft. Like, he was an anesthetist. Like, he's a guy who was a doctor in doing, like, brain surgery on kids to save them after they got in car wrecks.
Like, right. There are like 100 or so people in his specialty nationwide, something like that.
Exactly. Like, this guy was insane and did all these things with Hunter, and then on the other side was, like, one of, like, an amazing doctor who you could just be incredibly happy to have him as your doctor. And when I met him, he was going through med school, and we would draft on Thursday nights, and he would have his med school books there to study while we were drafting. He just had such a dedication to that craft, and it's absolutely, like, amazing that he managed all of that. And then it's worth mentioning that after Ian passed, when we started this memorial, his mom made a scholarship in his name at the college that he and I both went to, the University of Texas at Dallas. So now there's an Ian Jashua scholarship for neuroscience, and they give a scholarship away every year to a student that is studying or researching neuroscience at that school.
Amazing.
That's awesome. So when this event started, the Open started, you said that you wanted to create an event that Hunter would want to play in, but in this event, the one this past weekend, there was Flesh and Blood and there was Lorcana. You said this was the second year that the Ian Jashua Memorial Sealed was there. So a lot of events have been added. I understand that the venues changed a couple of times. How has the event grown and evolved over the years?
Yeah, so the first couple of years we were in, like, if you've ever been in the Dallas-Fort Worth, the Fort Worth Convention Center, you know that they've got giant halls there big enough for, you know, the biggest tournaments. We've run Star City Opens there, but this was not that room. We were in a little corner room off the back of the round section that they use as the rodeo arena, like cement floors, tables, kind of what you might think of as, you know, classic old school magic tournament space. We didn't know how many people we were going to get, right? So, cheerleading competition in the next hall with we didn't have the word Karen yet, but if we had the word Karen, we would have described the moms as Karens, eyeballing all of us for, you know, being like trouble when really nobody was paying any attention to them. So we went from there and then we got a little bit bigger and moved to another venue. Still concrete floors. I remember one of the things that has always set this tournament apart is it's a big cash prize, right? So that's, again, goes back to what the people who this is named for loved, these big cash tournaments. And we would lay out the dollar bills on the table for the top eight. Like, so you just see, $100 bills up to $10,000 in the middle of the table. We don't do that anymore because there's too many people around. But also, the first couple tournaments were multi-format. The first portion before the cut to top eight was constructed. It was whatever format we happened to choose at the time.
Probably standard
because standard wasn't horrible. And then we would cut to a draft and run a draft because, again, Guild Mages draft. So we would run a top eight draft with. We started with, you know, the premier sets. It was the first master sets were there. So like the first couple had, you know, all the gimmick decks of the Storm and the Domain and splice decks were all in the top eight. So it was a lot of fun to watch that happen and have to go through. Now that's evolved and we're bigger. We're trying to get more attention and get more coverage. And let's be honest, coverage is not as exciting when you're trying to cover a draft and get people for a format that they're never going to play in or never going to be able to repeat this exact scenario, right, and figure out what they would do in a given spot. So it's kind of shifted to a more traditional constructed cut to top eight over the years. Joe, do you have anything you want to add to that history?
Yeah. In terms of the tournament, it was a one-day tournament. The first year, it was like seven rounds and 110 players or something. And now we play 2 days, eight rounds on day one, and it got to day two. And like you would see with these big tournaments, and that was a big deal as well when we were a one-day tournament for 5 years.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I didn't mention that.
Yeah, the seventh year we went to 2 days when we moved to. Or after we moved to the Hearst Conference Center, which we don't need to praise them too much, but they are like the best venue I've ever worked with, and that's where we are today. It's absolutely amazing, one big ballroom, and the perfect size for this tournament.
Not only that, but there are buys for this event. Like y'all work with other LGSs to run tournaments that give buys to this event. Don't you?
Yeah, for the first time last year, we decided we want to offer buys in the tournament, and we offer trials, and LGS can have a Hunter Burton trial, and it'll be part of our outreach program this next year, where if you run a Hunter Burton trial, we'll send you a kit that has some of our stuff in it, because what we want is you to have a poster on your wall that says, like, you know, everybody's welcome here, here's information about this cause and resources that you can use if you're having a tough time. But, like, we run trials, people can get buys, you come on Friday, you can play an 8-player trial, whoever goes 3-0 gets a buy in the tournament. It's a big, fun time on Friday.
Awesome.
Wow.
The other thing you mentioned that I think is worth touching on is the other games. It sounds like we talk about Magic. This is a Magic Judge podcast, but it's worth noting that like we had a Pokemon tournament last year. This year we had a Flesh and Blood Battle Hardened. There was a Lorcana tournament that capped out at 64 players this year. And the other games maybe aren't as significant for some Magic players, but from the organization and cause point of view, we see it as really important because we want everybody to be included. We don't want people to feel like because they like Lorcana and they want to be part of the TCG community playing Lorcana that they're not welcome at this thing. So we're trying to include as many games as we can to, you know, let everybody know whatever you want to do. You want to come play board games with your friends? We got some board games you can come grab one and play with your friends. If you want to come play Uno all weekend, we would love to have you come play Uno all weekend and be a part of our tournament.
Sounds almost like a regular convention at this rate.
Really does have that vibe.
It does. I've never been, so I'm wondering what else, you know, if you were to market this, if you were to say, hey, players, you should come out and check this out, what type of an experience do players expect beyond what you've already described? I mean, is there some kind of, I think I saw this on Twitter that there was some kind of a fundraising auction maybe, or are there artists and vendors? What are the value added types of things that happen at this tournament?
Yes. All of the above. Yeah. It, as you said, it's taken on, it's gone from like a one hit Magic tournament to a full convention feel to it. We brought in several artists this year. We've got a bunch of vendors out in the hall. You don't have to pay to get in. So, unlike Magic Fest, you don't have to pay for your event ticket to come in and visit, because that's not the point. We want people to come in and participate and get to see people that they haven't seen in a year or longer. You know, I know I saw people in the hall that this year that I haven't seen in 2 or 3 years. There are definitely more things. There was a silent auction. We've got a great prize wall too, to support, if you just want to come and play side events and grind different formats for on demands, you can do that too. So we do a little bit of all of the above. We're trying to make sure and be, as Joe said, inclusive to everybody's interests, because it's about building community more than, it's a huge competition, obviously, but the community is a huge piece of that. And you really feel that when you're in the room. At least I think so, and I've kind of heard the same from others.
Yeah, I would touch on the prize wall being a unique prize wall, because if you go to a Command Fest or you go to an SCG, they're going to have the same thing on their prize wall every time. They're going to have booster packs and oversized cards and all that kind of stuff. And they're limited to what they have because they choose what inventory they have. But we're a charity tournament that's been around for 10 years. We got a lot of stuff, and people donate stuff. And the destination of that stuff often ends up being the prize wall. So there will be unique things that you might not have expected just on the prize wall that you can buy with the tokens you get for winning our side events.
Yeah, I saw D&D books.
Yeah, we might get a box of product, or not enough that we could run an event with it, right? So yeah, one of those old Masters boxes might show up out there. You never know.
You can buy our T-shirt from 2017 on the prize wall.
I saw some interesting things.
You can buy the giant dice from this event, which, by the way, every event we do an oversized commemorative D6 for these events, and those are a hot collectible item also. So you can find those on the prize wall sometimes. If you're lucky, you might be able to find one of those anyway.
I give the prize wall one every year that they can give away for a lot of winnings.
Cool. So this event, one of the things that impressed me was this event is not tied to a Star City Games or a Pastimes or, major tournament organizer, one of the big names that go around, but it really had a lot of the same elements that those events. There were artists, there were vendors, there was, multiple events going on, side events. There was a stage, all the things that you would expect. But one thing that was kind of different was the mood of the event was significantly more chill than other events done by some other tournament organizers. The big thing that I noticed was on day two of the open, despite being a 15K tournament, we were not getting the sharky angle shooty type calls that you would normally expect at something like that. What do you guys attribute that mood to?
I put a big part of that on just, it's evident what the overall goal is. It's pretty clear that the goal is community, and that we're trying to raise awareness for a cause that too many of us have had some level of experience with, whether directly or indirectly. It has touched so many of us in the community. And then we do it. Aaron Giddings is a phenomenal public speaker, and he always does an introductory speech. He doesn't speak as long as he did the first year now, but he speaks, five or 10 minutes about the cause and the history and why everybody's there. I have always made sure to emphasize in my judge speech to make sure that, hey, we're here and play clean and, play sportsmanlike, because the people that this is to remember, they would want it to win, but they didn't want to win in the in that crummy angle shooty way. There are always exceptions at any event, but they tend to get the memo pretty quickly that that's not going to be tolerated. And I always have always made sure to encourage my judges on my staff as head judge to use those unsportsmanlike conduct warnings. I don't care. I'm going to back you up if you want to issue a USC minor. I'll always back you up on that at any event, but especially at this event, please use it and make sure that people stay calm and cool to each other. Pull people apart. If they need a minute to cool off and walk away, use it. I'd rather do that than have people get angry or tense or not have a good time.
I think there's some attribution that you can give to the players that have come and played at this event last year or for the last 2 years or even for 10 years, that they're, you know, good Magic players and they're the ones that are going to try and do the angle shooting and the scumbling behavior, and they're Hunter's friends and that's not their vibe for this tournament. So when you cut out that large portion and then the other folks that might think that's the best way to win a tournament, they start to be in the presence of all these other people who are just way more laid back. They go, oh, okay, I see. None of us are going to do that anymore because
That's a good point. That's a good point. And so, it's a little bit like a virus, right? So you get the first set in that played that way, and then you rotate in a few new people who pick that up. And then, so the next year when they come back, they're the ones that are showing, okay, we're not going to do that. And then the next group catches that vibe too and holds on. So I think it's kind of self-perpetuating from the beginning because we hammered that so much in the beginning, and because of what the event has been. I think that that's been a factor. You say it's always felt that way. And I really, really like this event. Like I say, I always talk about that point to people when I'm talking about the event.
So from my perspective, or what I was able to see, was this mood even kind of altered judge behavior too, right? Like, the players are pretty chill, so we can be a little looser in terms of we're not necessarily like super stiff judge robot with giving the calls. You know, we're able to like joke around with the players, kid around with them because they're a lot looser. It's a charity event, so obviously the judges are there working for a charity organization, and like that alters how you work the event. Like, suddenly you're not concerned that I got in at 8 o'clock and got cut at 6, but this other person who got in at 9 was also cut at 5. You know, there's none of the, when you're doing teardown, like trying to pester people so that you can get cut early, because everyone who's there wants to be there and wants to be part of the event. So you're there, you know, for the whole thing. So it was very, very cool in that regard.
Right. Yeah. And we try to staff judges along those lines. Like you say, judges that want to be there. And we try to make sure that we have sufficient staff because so that we can have a chance to talk and relax a little bit rather than being overworked, rather than being right-sized. We try to be a little bit higher than absolutely necessary to make an event like this run, which also helps with that.
I would say another interesting thing about the judges and the vibe is that when you're judging at a regular tournament, you might notice some judges who are really confident and cool, and like, you know, the really experienced judges don't get uptight and they aren't those judge robots, like we were saying. And this opportunity to see and just be able to take that step back is really important. Y'all had Madison Henry on the show a few weeks ago, and that episode was about confidence, and she was the head judge of our 5K on Sunday, and she was really worried, as you might be, not having done that before. And it did not take long for oh, we're just cool, and I don't need to be anxious to set in because all the judges were relaxed and the players were relaxed, and that was an amazing boost to her confidence for the whole day and the whole weekend and everything. So it's notable that like people get this opportunity to be in a laid back situation that maybe doesn't exist at other kinds of tournaments.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So doing segueing in, so Hibbs, you've head judged the Open for nine of 10 years or so. How does that differ from other large events that you've worked with maybe like Star City or Pastimes or one of the other TOs?
Yeah, I think we kind of hit kind of beating the dead horse here, but it really is a much more relaxed environment, particularly with the players, and the sportsmanship aspect is a lot better. You know, I've removed a few people from the event over the years, but it's not like it's not like they're because they are yelling or screaming at each other. I would say this is always the most sportsmanlike event that I ever judge, compared to, you know, one of the Star City Opens that I had judged, where I gave a USC minor or major, excuse me, at the player meeting, right? For being just the way they were treating the people sitting next to them. Like, it's like, seriously, do we need to treat each other that way? We're all here to play Magic. So it's like I say, I would say that's the biggest thing. And then, like I say, we always try to have a good staff, same as we usually as most events, right? We try to do rocks and reaches of we make sure that we have good people, and we bring in some new people every year to help learn all to learn, because you gotta as Sheldon Mennery used to always taught me, you gotta train your placement. So we try to bring in some new judges as well, and continue to train those judges as well, and bring up for the next set of years. And so it's always a good mix, and some local judges, and we've been in more judges from far away now, and it really is an outstanding judge to be on the staff for.
So you kind of mentioned a little bit how you pick judges or what you're looking for. But I heard this rumor. I heard that judges aren't paid to work. Is that true? Are they volunteering their time for this, or at least in part?
In large part, that's correct. They come to this event because they want to. We do have some amount of travel sponsorships and hotel rooms taken care of. We get food at the during the weekend at the event, but which is a big bonus to me. Like, that's not to be underestimated, to not have to walk away from the venue and spread out to get something to eat. But yeah, for the most part, judges are there because they like the event. They like the feel of it. They like what it stands for. It's a passion for pretty much all of us that are there.
Does that make the selection process difficult? I mean, do you have a lot of judges that are applying for a limited number of slots? Do you have a lot of the same judges that want to come back year after year? How does that work out for you all?
Yes and yes. Staffing any event is a real challenge, to figure out who you accept and who you decline. And there are always more judges than we can accept, and more judges than we can sponsor to bring here. We do get goodie bags. It doesn't begin to cover, what you put into it. But if somebody always people always come away with a value that they maybe feel more than in terms of lining their pocket.
Yeah, I would say that there aren't very many events that are as competitive as this one in terms of staffing. We have to decline like 75% of the people that apply. And
Wow.
part of that's because me and David and plenty of other people go around telling everybody how great this event is and how they should come. And then they all apply and we're like, oh no.
What have we done to ourselves?
Yes. So it's a challenge, and we're trying to like find new ways and rotate people in and get people opportunities. And but
But
ultimately,
it's
when it's a
a
volunteer organization, like I need to find people that are willing to put in even more extra free work outside of the weekend.
You know, it's a problem though. It's a good problem to have though, right? Because it means that we are not just like taking anybody who applies. We're able to be selective. So it's not all downside that we have, you know, have to decline 75%, though they're all, you know, obviously we turn away a fair number of applicants. God, I really wish I could accept this person. We do try to maintain some consistency year to year, but we also try to rotate. Okay, this person has never had a chance to work this event, so let's make sure that we get them that opportunity.
That's what a lot of what happened this year. We had a really, really strong staff this year, and a large number of them had, this is their first time. Like
this, you know, this staff was this year.
April is E.
Yeah, Travis said something, who was our judge manager, the manager this year, said something to the effect of this was like staffing the Pro Tour this year. And seriously, the number of years of experience of judges that I had on the floor was just phenomenal. I couldn't have asked for a better staff this year. It was they just really hit it out of the park. And it wasn't like I say, it wasn't all judges that had been here for a long time either. It was just an outstanding group.
So what I'm hearing is we shouldn't post this episode because then more judges will apply and make it harder for us to get accepted next year.
I mean, I don't mind.
Well, like I say, we bring people back year after year because they have enjoyed it, or they've done well for us, or brought a feel or an enjoyment to the event, and then we rotate other people in also. So it wouldn't necessarily serve your purpose to not post it, I guess, is what I'm saying.
The message to present company and everybody listening is that if you really want to be on staff for this event, the thing to do is find a way to do extra work and make yourself valuable to me and Travis and Aaron and the organization, and we'll find a way to get you there. Like, Hibbs has been the head judge for many years for a multitude of reasons, but one of them is that there's a lot of extra work that goes into the head being the head judge, and he isn't like turning the screws on me saying, well, you need to, you know, compensate me more because I'm the head judge. He wants to do it. And I need people to be like really strong sides leads that spend a week or two in advance of the tournament getting stuff ready to be a sides lead. I need operations people who are going to come on Wednesday and help me load everything into the building and do all that. And that's not your shift starts at 8:30 and you are done at 5 o'clock and you go to dinner, which I need those judges, but I need people that are good at doing other stuff and to grow the entire thing. So it's, you know, it's very much like Judge Foundry. We need people who are willing to do stuff because they have the passion for it, and then they'll get to do things. And that's how nonprofits work, because we don't have any money to pay people.
So what I will say with that respect is the stage staff did an incredible job of making the judges who work there feel, you know, valuable and valued and just bent over backwards to support us and make our stuff awesome. Like, I think there was a joke where there was a concierge form and that, you know, the joke was, well,
you might need to back up, Perlman.
Yeah.
What's a concierge form?
Did I use the wrong word?
No, but I did, like, that word is a concept that might be unfamiliar to judges who are working events that are not.
I was about to explain. It was a form that was explained to me as part of this event that you could just go and say that you needed a thing, and Aaron Leonard would make it happen. So, like, if you forgot, you know, deodorant or a toothbrush or something like that, you could put it on the concierge form, and poof, it would appear. And
tickets to a Cowboys game? Maybe? No.
Yeah.
No. I guess
not. You could ask. You could ask, but there's no guarantees. Like, you could put in completely unreasonable requests.
Right.
There was a volleyball at the event that when I asked where the volleyball came from, I was told someone put it on the concierge form.
Oh, no. Really? That's amazing.
And it appeared.
It was apparently that came up last year. I missed out on it last year somehow, but apparently this is the second year that Wilson has been there.
Yeah. So it was great. I was told, I didn't do it, but I was told, put a cowboy hat on there and see if you can get one. You know, because apparently there were plastic cowboy hats from a few years ago, and they did in fact make an appearance at the dinner on Sunday night. So,
yeah, Aaron did that for the Grand Prix San Antonio the year that I became regional coordinator of USA South. Those of you who don't know me or haven't seen me at an event know that may not realize that I am known for wearing a cowboy hat when I'm on the floor where I'm allowed to. We're not going to flash back to no hats while judging discussions because I don't want to traumatize Brian too much, but I am typically allowed to wear my cowboy hat.
Please.
And but I always wear my cowboy hat, particularly as head judge. And, you know, I find that it helps a lot in a room full of black shirts to be able to scan across the room and see somebody wearing a cowboy hat and go, that person over there wearing the cowboy hat. So I was unaware that they showed up at the judge dinner. I couldn't bring myself to attend because I didn't think that I would be able to bring myself to leave, or I might not be fit for driving home. After that event, after being a little verklempt.
Now, you had earlier in the podcast mentioned, as Sheldon said, you've got to train your replacement. You announced this year at the event that this was your last year head judging the Open.
I did indeed.
Do you mind sharing a little bit like what you've learned from the experience? How you select? Do you have a replacement? Have you selected one? Have you been training up a replacement?
I have somebody in mind. I don't know if this person is going to accept it or not. They said they will, but obviously schedules are always subject to change. And unlike past years, we have not locked down the schedule for the next year yet. So we usually Joe has a save the date in the swag bag along so that people know a year out. Hey, plan for this weekend, next March, to be in Dallas again for the next event. But unless something has changed, we don't have that date locked down yet for 2025.
Something has changed.
Okay, well.
We have a date.
We will make sure that we hit that here. We will make sure that we hit that up again here at the end.
Yeah.
So I do have somebody in mind. I have been training a number of replacements and options because, like I say, that's something that Sheldon always put in place and always emphasized. And then it felt like the right tribute at this point to step down from this specific position and role, demonstrate the same level of confidence in the judges that have been coming up and building this event and show them that I have the level of confidence in them that he had in us when he stepped down from his position in the judge program. As it happened, he stepped down and went emeritus at the same event, Worlds 2011, where I received my level 3. So it just seemed like the right time to step aside from this and let the judges at this event really shine.
Is there anything specific in your 9 years as head judge for this event? Has it taught you anything specific? Maybe judging specifically, or just general life.
Like I said earlier in the program, you never know what somebody else's struggle is. You can't judge by looking at people what they're dealing with or what's going on under the surface or what difficulties they may have been through. So it's definitely helped me to be more patient and empathetic and deal with some of the difficult people in difficult situations. And also, I've learned from this on how to emphasize sportsmanship at other events too. So, you know, I try to bleed that from the top down and make sure that that really, really spreads through not just the judge staff. And if you get it in the judge staff that that's the expectation, then it does tend to reflect on the players too.
Joe, you're not, you know, stepping down from the head judge position, but same question. Have you, you know, the years that you've served as TO for this event, can you tell us something that you've learned from this experience as well?
So I would boil it down to me getting better at seeing other people's perspectives, because many people who know me know that I'm really good at optimizing things and coming up with complicated systems and other things like that. And there's other stuff that I'm not great at. And the biggest thing that I've gotten out of this was learning from Zandy how to make sure you're looking after all of the players and that you're not like ignoring some of them because their needs aren't important. And then I could go through a whole list of other people that have been involved of things I've learned from them because of how they're doing it. Like, Hibbs has probably taught me a lot of patience and understanding and, you know, some diplomacy things and other stuff. I would probably have to think more to give you more detail, but I've, you know, worked with Hibbs for a long time and that's what comes to mind first. But I've learned lots of things from lots of other people, and that's, you know, I think it's being more understanding of everybody and not just doing things the way that I want.
Awesome. So as somebody who hasn't had the opportunity to go out to one of these, I'm very interested. What are the plans for next year? Anything you feel like sharing now, or something we can be looking forward to for next year?
Well,
our dates for next year are March 14th to 16th. Go ahead, David.
No, that's an important piece. I was going to say one thing that I will say. I am stepping back from head judging this event. That does not mean that I will not be a part of this event. I will 100% be coming to this event. It's an important and special event to me. The one thing that I have decided is I almost certainly will not be part of the judge staff, because it seems like I said, it seems like I really need to let the rest of the judges have their opportunity. And I don't want to undercut anybody's authority either, right? So if, you know, whoever comes in and head judges, if I'm on the judge staff and everybody knows that I've been the head judge for nine out of the past 10 years, who are the players going to look to? And I don't want to do that to anybody. So seems like I will find something else to do. It might very well be that I come and play in that event as a demonstration of that faith. And like I said at the beginning of this podcast, when I was introducing myself, I'm a spike at heart. So I stepped up to be a judge because it meant that we would have more competitive events for everybody. So I feel like that would be a good demonstration.
Cool. Is there anything that's like the behind the scenes detail or something that a judge or a player might not be aware that you have to do in order to run an event like this? I know we're getting a little into the TOE side, but the fact that y'all have run a tournament like this for so many years that is not, you know, again, tied to a major store or major tournament organizer is pretty impressive. So what might be something like a little thing that people might not be aware that y'all have to do?
First thing that came to mind was the trophy. So we have one giant trophy. I cannot describe it. It's like 4 feet tall.
Wow.
And yeah.
It's big.
There's pictures on the website.
No, bigger than that. It was big.
Yeah, Mr. Zandy insisted that we get a really cool big trophy because that was really important. And we're not going to tell him no when it comes to what the trophy looks like. So one of the challenges with the trophy is we only have one of them, and players like the trophy, so every year I offer that they can take it home, and then it ends up in different places, and I live in Seattle, and other people that run the tournament don't all live in Dallas, so getting the thing like back to where it needs to be and to the engraver is often a challenge. There's been a couple years where the trophy like sat on above the shelves in my brother's kitchen for like 10 months in a row because the answer was everyone else is busy. Just drop it off at this address. And then I asked my brother, hey, can you just like put this somewhere to like come get it? So that's a big, funny challenge that people might not know about.
Wow.
Yeah. Just physically move. Cause I did help carry that thing in from the van. It's a very large trophy.
I mean, it's not the Stanley Cup, but it's pretty close.
No,
that's exactly the thought I had when you mentioned this. I'm like, okay, it sticks around. People take it around and do silly things with it. This is totally Stanley Cup right now.
I'm not certain it isn't as tall as the Stanley Cup. It's not as wide. Like,
I'd probably say like a 4 or 5 year old. It's about that tall.
Yeah. So you talked about getting it in from the van, B-Prill.
Yeah.
One of the other challenges that other TOs don't have is that we run this event in the same place every year, and it only runs once a year, and I don't live in Texas. So I have volunteers, and Aaron Giddings, the other guy, organizer, lives there, but we run this event out of an undisclosed location storage unit near the Hearst Convention Center, and the load-in and load-out process is who's got a truck, go to the storage unit, get as many things as you can, and bring it in here. There's not one big truck that has everything on it that we drove across the country with because we set everything up in our store last week. No, this is Joe shows up on Tuesday before the event, and then on Wednesday he moves a bunch of stuff into his hotel room, and on Thursday we like all of the stuff that ran that event was moved there by 5 people over 8 hours on Thursday.
There's another event running there before us, so it's not like we get the whole week to put everything in the week in advance.
Yeah. and the carts that the hotel provides are
might lose a wheel. Yeah.
The Hearst Conference Center is an excellent venue, and they may need to buy a new cart.
Right?
Oh, no.
I was told one of the wheels fell off.
As we were, we made one trip out to do loadout, and on the return, about 10 feet into the return, this little metal cylinder just fell off. And it was like, oops, hold on. And then the wheel just fell off and then started grinding on the tread. And we had lost a bolt somewhere. So we had to trace our footsteps back through the venue looking for this bolt on the floor. And we found it at the prize wall, like near the prize wall. Like, so we just kind of had to snake all the way back through the venue. And then we took it back, and there were, you know, we found, or it wasn't the bolt, it was the nut that held the bolt on. So there was a lot of PG-13 humor. So is there any advice or suggestions for someone who is looking to start a recurring charity tournament? Because y'all have a lot of vendors.
So,
and a lot of support, a lot of people.
Yeah. And I, again, a big part of our secret is we're not trying to come out ahead, right? We're just trying to keep the event going every year. So we're not trying to make $8,000 for a specific charity. So that's a particular advantage that we have in that regard, where I know a lot of people are trying to make money to give money to a specific cause. So, you know, maybe start with a small goal of just trying to keep it alive and then build it so that you can start to make money for your charity. might be my hint for somebody looking to do that. Joe, what do you say?
You have to start small, because like we said earlier, this was a meeting room at the Fort Worth Convention Center that cost $400 for the day and 100 players and a 5K in 2014. And that's, you know, a pretty big tournament, but it's not what we're doing now. And attempting to scale all the way up to what we're doing now is not possible. And you just, if you want to start a charity tournament, you need people who are willing to do a lot of work because they care about the charity or they care about the cause or they care about what's going on. And you need people that are willing to fund it too. The reality is,
just like anywhere else, you need to have money to make money. So you have to have somebody willing to lay out, to bankroll it, to start a lot of the time. Because you have to pay money up front to reserve the room, right? So even if it's $400 just to reserve a room, where does that $400 come from? It comes out of somebody's pocket.
And that doesn't mean the answer is just find someone with deep pockets and then use their money to make slightly less money for charity. That might not be the best thing for your charity, but you have to consider, you know, who's going to do the work and where the funding is coming from. So if your charity tournament doesn't make sense as something like what we're doing, go to your store and just say, hey, can we do an event on a Saturday for free in your store that I'm going to judge for free? And it's going to be modern, so there's no product costs. And I'm going to go to the local trophy store and buy a $50 trophy, and that's going to be the prize. And now every $20 entry just goes directly to whatever cause. That might be a good place to scale from instead of trying to build a giant thing first.
Yeah.
Because then you can do all the work.
Start with the core of the snowball and then start it rolling.
And so I guess one of the things I'm hearing is it's got to be something that you really believe in, because you are going to be doing a lot of the work. So you need
to put in a lot more work than you think you are going to put in.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I worked a job doing all the work I do here, I would make reasonable amounts of money just doing this. And I don't make any of that. And that's because I care about it.
Well, if there's any group that is committed to investing time of themselves into things they care about, it is Magic Judges, that's for sure.
Is there anything that we haven't touched on that y'all specifically want to talk about?
So I'd like to make sure that I had a little bit of thanks on here for our sponsors. Wizards has been a big supporter. Ultra Pro gives us all kinds of materials. They make our sleeves and deck boxes and all kind of play mats and other goodies that we hand out for this event. We get things at reduced rates. We get things just given to us to go in the goodie bags. Lots of things get added to us. There are local game stores that write checks to us to provide prize money for the 1Ks and 5Ks. So many people put so much into this event because of what this event represents and what it means. Just thank you to all of those people that contribute to make this event possible.
As the person who promises sponsors where they will be, I will add that Legend Story Studios and Flesh and Blood was a big sponsor this year. Our vendors, CM Games, Card Cash, Laughing Dragon, who else was there? New Horizons Games. Park Hill Fine Art Portraits always donates a thing for our silent auction. That's really cool. They give you a photo shoot. DreamHack Magic donated all of our RCQ kits this year, which is awesome. We appreciate everybody, DreamHack and Carter and all of those folks. Local game stores, Area 51 Collectibles, Common Ground Games, Generation X Comics and Games, Playball Sports and Memorabilia. David Adams is a big name. They donate some money for our vintage and legacy events. And then Panini is a big name in sports cards. They donated some stuff every year. And let's see who else. Starkhound Studios, another LGS store in Texas. And then Quan Watson, aka Power Dragon, is a person who comes in and helps us a lot with social media and other things and is on my sponsor list. Thank you to all of those people. They contribute a lot that make this work.
Yeah, you can tell that Joe is the one that always talks with all of those. It really is an incredible list. And thanks, Joe, for doing the NASCAR pitch there for us. I could have never gotten all of those in.
I'm looking at the website. I can't remember them all either.
Yeah, like I said, there really are a lot of people that contribute a tremendous amount to this event every year. As Joe said, I couldn't begin to remember all of them off the top of my head. I'd say them all, and then I'd have to come back 10 minutes later as I remember. and then another 10 minutes later, I'd remember somebody else, and so on for probably 3 days.
So there is, you asked if there was something else we wanted to talk about, and you want to talk about the watch?
Sure. I will absolutely talk about the watch. So I mentioned earlier in the program, for those who've been paying attention, about how Hunter loves giant watches. So one of the traditions early on for this event was that one of the prizes for the top eight, specifically for the winner of the event, was we would give out a giant fancy Tissot watch, and it would always be selected by members of the Burton family. So that would be, you know, like something that Hunter would be proud to have and wear. So we did this for the first, I don't remember if it was 3 or 4 years, and then we decided, and then what we found was that the winner viewed that as more prize money, because they would then sell that watch to somebody else. Aaron Giddings, who has been our the chairperson for the event, bought the first one. In fact, didn't he buy the first two, Joe?
Yeah, anyway, I believe he has two of them, and some other local two.
And then, yeah,
stores have them.
Yeah, and so they were getting sold, and then we realized, well, that doesn't really make a lot of sense, right? If it's just gonna become prize money, why are we going to this effort, and it's not going to mean something? So we wanted that giant fancy watch to really mean something. So we shifted gears a little bit a few years back and started making that a community impact award. So if there's somebody in the community that is doing something to make a particularly welcoming space to help other community members through tough times, that we wanted to make sure we recognized them and give them an award at this event. And so, like this year, our award winner also lost their son to suicide. So it was another direct impact. And what she did was she took that and she started, as you so often hear of people doing, channeled her loss into taking care of others, and went so far as becoming a licensed counselor to try to help other people who are struggling. So we award our community impact prize with the watch. And this year was the first time that we announced that without our prize winner having any idea they were about to receive it, which was I thought it was really touching to be able to see the genuine reaction. But I think that's probably not what Joe was trying to get me to talk about.
You've given the whole history, but I'll get to the next part. Is that as Hibbs has explained, this watch and the Hunter Burton watches are like an important part of this organization, and they kind of represent that you're a person that's important to the organization. And when I after being involved with the event for 5 years and being really involved as the TO for 3 years, Donna, Hunter's mom, and Aaron decided to give me a watch because they wanted to recognize that I was doing that. I was going out of my way, flying down, paying my own flight from Seattle and doing all this stuff to make this event happen. And they're like, we have to thank this guy, and gave me, it was before we called it the Community Impact Award, but that was basically the idea. Like, this guy has gone out of his way to help this community, and it's important to recognize that. And I personally don't necessarily view the watch that I have as a community impact watch based on all of the stuff that I've talked to Aaron and other people about and how we've picked these other ones. And we've given watches to local game store owners that are great and other folks. And this year, when I had like some knowledge that David was going to retire, but wasn't sure, and it was 10 years, and I'm like, David's been around for so long, I would be remiss to not acknowledge his part of this organization. And I told Aaron, like, we need to get Hibbs a watch. This is important. And then we did. And what I didn't know, like, this is the truth. I didn't explain this to you this last weekend, but I didn't know that you were going to announce your retirement in your speech on Saturday morning until Aaron hinted it like 15 minutes before that that might happen. And I was like, well, that, now you have to go get the watch, because if he says he's going to retire, then I have to do that afterwards, because it's really important and I want people to see that. So like very genuinely, as I said on the stage, like Hibbs is really important to me and the organization and everyone, and we want him to be one of those people that has this artifact of being part of what we're doing. And we'll keep doing that going forward, and I don't know how recognition's worth or anything like that, but you know, David, you certainly rise to the bar of deserving that.
Yeah, it certainly means a great deal to me to have one of those. I will definitely be wearing that when I return every year. I might not even wear my other watch. I was wearing both watches because it was so important as the, you know, trying to watch clocks this year that I had both watches to where I could watch it and set timers. But I probably won't even wear my other watch when I return in future years because of that. You clearly choked me up a little bit and caught me off guard with it, even though you weren't fully prepared to do it at the time. That like I say, I hadn't told anybody because I wanted it to be meaningful and impactful in that moment. So I thought I gave you a little hint in advance because I thought it was fair as the person who was going to have to find a head judge the next year to have some kind of warning, but it was definitely very meaningful to me to receive that particular symbol.
Awesome. Well, I think that's most of the things that we had to talk about. Is there anything else? Any closing thoughts that y'all want to share with us?
I have one so I started getting into magic around the time of, I think it was the second Hunter Burton Memorial Open, and was starting to get into judging and had been hearing about it through the grapevine. And it was one of those things that I always noted, like something about it always stuck out to me. I was like, oh, this seems like something really cool, really special, really important. And it's gotten to the point, and I think the three of us were actually talking about it at some point recently, where this event has definitely made, I think, collectively all of our judging bucket lists, where it's one of those things we want to make happen at some point, each of us individually, just kind of want to be a part of this, because it really is something special and something that you don't see very often. And there's something really cool about the kind of community there that you've built, because everybody who I've ever heard talk about having gone there, having played there, they all come back with the same kind of feel of just like, it is the epitome of what people expect when they think of that magic community, like that gathering part of it, you know?
I've heard that story over and over again, and I appreciate it for everyone that thinks that way.
Yeah, and I would definitely like to say thank you to all of my staff that's been behind me all of the years, and a huge thanks to Joe for keeping this running. I'm sure it was immensely difficult to try to pick that up with the unexpected loss of Jeff Sandy in February, when we were going to have an event in March, was at least the plan. As Sheldon liked to say, surround yourself with good people and good things will happen. And I think this event and every staff that we've had at this event is a phenomenal demonstration of what he was trying to say.
Yeah, if I get a shout out, it's that when Jeff passed in 2018, it took me a couple weeks to figure it out, but I asked Travis Lauro to come out to that year's event because I knew that I wasn't going to be able to. This is the year that Hibbs didn't head judge. I knew I wasn't going to be able to head judge and do all the other things. And I was like, dude, I'll pay for your flight. Come out and just do this. And he just jumped at it and came in and stepped in and was like awesome and made the event actually work. And then has stepped up and been our judge manager and done all these things over the years. And I know he's grown a lot, but I appreciate him a lot, that the extra effort he puts into this thing more than most other people involved at all.
Yeah, just from what y'all have talked about and seeing the event firsthand, the amount of love and care that you put into this event and the community that you've looked to build and create a space where people, you know, it becomes their annual highlight, something like a, I don't want to get too like poetic, but like a potential beacon of light in some times that might not be so, in times that might be dark for them. It's a really wonderful cause. It's an amazing event. There's just so much love, that goes into the event, you know, seeing that there's coverage there, there's vendors there, there's, you know, prize walls, there's, you know, what is it, like 30, 40 different types of events going on over the course of the 3 days. Everyone's putting in doing things. There's, I think there was like a happy hour cocktail party for people on Friday night. It's just, y'all should be very, very proud of what all you've accomplished.
I appreciate that a lot. It's a lot of effort, and I know people enjoy it, so thank you.
Wow. I just want to dash off my application for next year already. So that sounds like we're at an end point here. We've said all that we can say about the Hunter Burton Memorial Open. We hope that judges and even, you know, players who listen to our podcast will take the time next year to clear a few days in their calendar in March and maybe consider attending. So, we're all good. Everybody's happy.
Yeah. Come join us next year.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. That's our episode. Join us next time when we talk about splits. Ooh, are we finally going to get to do the dessert episode and talk about banana splits, or, you know, the other banana splits, anthropomorphic animals that hosted variety cartoons, songs, and skits from the late 60s. Can we talk about them?
That's nightmare fuel.
Yes, it is. It's great.
Oh, wow.
Until then, you can send us an email at judgecast@gmail.com or like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at JudgeCast and on Blue Sky at judgecast.bsky.social and check out any of our social media for invite links to our Discord server for judges new and old fans, and anyone who supports the judging community. I'm Charles Feather, and I keep it fair.
I'm Marcos Sanchez, and I keep it fun.
I'm Brian Prillman, and I will be applying to Hunter Burton next year.
Same.
I'm David Hibbs, and I will not be the head judge of the Hunter Burton Memorial Open next year.